Welcome to Distant Voices, a podcast presented by Willamette Week. Join us every Wednesday to hear members of the Willamette Week newsroom talk to Oregonians about how they are overcoming the pandemic. Come back on Saturdays to listen to Dive, a podcast hosted by me, Hank Sanders, that takes a look at the Willamette Week cover story and includes interviews with the biggest names in the state. You can enjoy more episodes of these podcasts on this channel and learn more about our work at wweek.com. Enjoy this episode of Distant Voices.
Hi, everybody. This is Aaron Mesh with Willamette Week. Today, I'm joined by Jeff Hawthorne, who's the Arts Program Manager for the City of Portland, works closely with the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And today, we're going to talk about what is my favorite subject in the city right now, which is the fate of an art installation on the very top of Mount Tabor that is a bust of York, the only Black member of the Corps of Discovery. That's the Lewis and Clark expedition. About a year ago, there was a statue there honoring Harvey Scott, who was a former publisher of the Oregonian, really didn't like women's suffrage. Somebody knocked that statue down, which is a fairly common occurrence during a year of social justice and racial justice protests. And then in February, suddenly a new statue was there, and that statue honored somebody else. And I think since then, there's been this sort of ongoing conversation in the city about what to do about that. There's also been the occasional vandalism, both from the left and the right, assuming the people who are leaving the graffiti, in fact, are representing the political camps that they claim to in their graffiti, and who really knows, and perhaps who really cares. Today, we're not really talking so much about destruction as construction. And there's been, there's been a lot of conversation in the past 3 or 4 days since word started to get out that this monument can't be permanent. But let's go back in time for a minute. So in February, the bust of York appears on Mount Tabor. What kind of conversation does that start within City Hall?
Well, first and foremost, we were as awed as everybody else about the quality of the sculpture and the manner in which it appeared just suddenly overnight. We were completely surprised by it and excited about the conversation that it started about, you know, who is represented in the city's public art collection and who hasn't been represented in the past. But just speaking about the mechanics of that temporary installation, you know, Portland Parks and Recreation has a policy about what to do when memorials and tributes suddenly appear in their parks, as this one did. We understand that there are many ways that communities commemorate individuals and support local causes through these kinds of tributes. And so the policy is to allow these temporary memorials to stay in place as long as they don't pose a danger to the public. So that was the city's initial reaction. And that's the position that remains today. The piece can stay as long as it doesn't present a danger. But now the trickier issue with York and why we have said that it's going to have to come down at some point is because although it looks like a bronze sculpture, it's actually constructed out of wood and urethane or a type of resin. And so it wasn't really designed to withstand the elements. So we don't really know how long it will be before the installation starts to deteriorate because of the weather, but RAC and the park staff have inspected the installment and it's holding up well. So York can remain for the time being.
How long does urethane typically last in the elements? Any idea?
I don't know. And I don't know that anyone has been able to assess that, perhaps because there aren't very many public artworks made of that material.
That's fair. There have been a lot of headlines in the last week, and I'm just going to say right out loud that I think several of those headlines are quite misleading, that say York is coming down, and then deep in the story it says, but not anytime soon, and it actually has nothing to do with the vandalism. There's a clear implication that readers are supposed to take from these headlines that York is coming down because the city got freaked out by some vandalism and would like to have this controversy off its hands. Is that an accurate representation?
Yeah, unfortunately, the way that some of the headlines have been written, that has generated a lot of calls and emails to me and other people at the city who were left with the impression that that the removal of the sculpture was imminent. You know, people thinking it's coming down this week or next, when in fact we've said all along that it can remain, but it will have to be replaced at some time because of its temporary nature.
So that could be years from now.
Could be years.
Depending on how urethane handles the weather.
Right. Right. Or, you know, I mean, the weather is one thing that could cause the sculpture to deteriorate and be removed. But at the same time, we are also having conversations with community about the permanent solution, not only at that site, but for some of the other monuments that were toppled last year. And so even another way that York could be removed is if we had come to an agreement based on community input about a permanent replacement for that sculpture.
Can you tell me a few of the options that are being discussed for what that permanent replacement could look like?
Nothing specific has been discussed other than the fact that some people in the community have suggested that the temporary sculpture could be recast as a bronze sculpture. And so that's one idea that has been put on the table, and the Regional Arts and Culture Council has been exploring that option with the artist who wishes to remain anonymous, but is in communication with RAC and with Commissioner Rubio's office. And so that's one possibility, but we definitely want to have more extensive conversations with the community and explore all of our options and the community's interests before we make a decision like that.
So there's a tidbit there that I find fascinating. The city knows who this artist is. Can you tell me anything about the artist? I realize you can't name them. You've agreed to a deal of anonymity. What can you tell me about this artist?
I honestly do not know the identity of the artist. I think some folks at the Regional Arts and Culture Council had a good guess and were able to confirm the identity of the artist, and they are communicating with the artist, but I don't know anything more than that, honestly.
Do you know if the artist is a Portlander?
I suspect they are, but I don't know that for sure.
Last question. How is the elk? Has it found a nice home upstate? How's it doing?
I'm happy to report that the elk is in excellent condition and safely in storage. The bronze was damaged during the protests, and that has been repaired. The elk was also part of a fountain that was also destroyed during the protests. And that part presents the more difficult challenge. So there is consensus on city council, and I think in the community, to return the elk to its position in the middle of Southwest Main Street. But because that fountain was destroyed, we have to figure out what we're going to build in place. And you know what? Probably not a fountain again, because it's in the middle of the street and we no longer need horses that need to quench their thirst at the fountain as it was originally designed. So we're talking about building a new pedestal that honors kind of the style and the magnitude of the base as it originally was. And then that's going to require some historical reviews. There'll be community input opportunity before the city council can approve the final design for a new pedestal where the elk will be returned.
Hello, this is Matt Singer. I'm the Arts and Culture Editor at Willamette Week, and today I am speaking with Jake Silberman, local Portland comic, occasional Willamette Week freelancer, and full disclosure, my neighbor, practically next door. But he is not next door right now. He is in New York City. Jake, maybe you could quickly explain what you're doing in New York.
Yes, I am on a comedy tour in a van that I bought a few months ago. The idea was basically to shoot kind of a road trip documentary about comedy coming back across America. So yeah, I am in New York City currently. I left Portland about 3 weeks ago. And yeah, we've been filming all the different scenes that we've been going in. I've been doing club dates, bar shows, open mics, trying to show the full gamut of comedy. And it is back, as is America. I don't know what it's like in Portland still, but as soon as we left, the pandemic was not existing at all in any town we've been in. So I don't know if Portland is just the last holdover or what, but everywhere else, it's gone. COVID is gone, I guess.
So you hit the road. So where was like the first place you stopped in to, and you're doing sets along the way. You're
doing sets, but yeah, they're all different. Like I said, it's, you know, like some of these smaller scenes don't have like shows every night. So we'll just do like their local open mic and meet the comics. So I can just list the towns we've been in. We were in Portland, Boise, Salt Lake, Denver, Omaha, Des Moines, Chicago, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, New York City.
Wow.
And yeah.
So like, tell me about like that first show. So was that like the first like in a club stand-up show, like the one like on this tour that you've done in like a year?
No, I actually the official start of the tour was I did a weekend at Helium, Memorial Day weekend featuring there, but I had been back to Helium once, I guess, I think it was in September. They had like a brief opening. And so I was there. And then when they reopened again, I watched a show there. So I had been in a club, in September. It was pretty dicey because obviously no one had the vaccine wasn't even out yet. So that was a little sketch, but you know, I didn't get COVID. Everybody wore a mask for the most part. And you know, this Helium people did a pretty good job of like spacing everybody out and like creating airflow and stuff. So yeah, I have been doing comedy, mostly outdoor comedy, for a few months before we hit the road. But yeah, I have done a few indoor things before the tour.
So what have you found? What's been like the common thread then? You know, if the idea was to sort of see what comedy looks like post-pandemic, what have you been seeing? What can you make sense of having done this now?
The weirdest thing for me is how quickly people have returned to normal life. Like my thought was that we would be going into different towns and different scenes and we would be seeing like different levels of reopening. You know, like this club is only at 10, you know, 20% or 25% or whatever. And, you know, but then we go to the next town and it's fully open. But honestly, I mean, it's weird to say, but like since leaving Portland, like a few days after, like I have barely thought about the pandemic. Like I think Portland it's one of the last holdouts because I've seen basically the entire country now. And almost everybody, it was like we would get into town like, oh yeah, we just got rid of the mask mandate and everything is open. So we just kind of were seeing every town right as they opened up. But as they opened up, people were just like, we were talking to people closely. We weren't wearing a mask. Like people for the most part, I think have been vaccinated, but yeah. So it's almost strange how quickly after such a hell of a year and a half almost, that it's just like this thing didn't even exist almost.
And what are you noticing about comedy now? Like, is everyone just doing like the same kind of general jokes about quarantine and what's happened the last year since we've all had this like universal experience together? Like, what does comedy look like now?
It seems like most comedians will open up with their set with like one or two jokes about the quarantine, but then, you know, since it's like such a common topic, you can't really like, you can't like be on that for too long. So then they kind of just go back into their set. So even comedy seems to have like quickly like processed it, or people have been processing it the whole time. But yeah, like for my set, out of like a 20 or 25 minute set, I maybe have like a minute or two up top at most about like, just like, cause it, to me, it's just more like, hey, we just have to acknowledge that we're like back in a room together. But like, I think people are very, very quickly like ready to get out, ready to laugh. The crowds have been really fun. They've been, I think, really excited to be out at a club again. A lot of people come up to you and say like, this is the first show I've been in indoors since the pandemic kind of ended, quote unquote. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to see this. But again, it's not like, I don't know, like I keep like, I'm 34. So I kept trying to like, the only event I could really think of was like 9/11, but 9/11 had a very like clear, like the event happened and then it was over and then we process it. But because this has like gone on for so long and it doesn't really have like a clear ending, or like the ending is kind of just like petering out, it's not just a hard stop. You're kind of just getting this different thing where people are going back to normal. You know, you still see some masks in New York. There's a guy across the street right now walking down the street with a mask, and people wear them in the subway. But from Portland to New York, we've seen almost nobody wear masks in any public space.
Yeah. And are you comfortable with that? I mean, you kind of threw yourself into the post-pandemic fire there. So
right.
Were you psychologically ready for that? Coming from Portland,
it took me like a day. Like when we got to Boise, our first stop, and we're like, wow, there's just no mask here. No one was wearing a mask. It wasn't a thing. I think they had just lifted their mandate. But we got to Boise and yeah, like I said, like I'm one of these people who it surprised me how quickly it turned. I was like, I maybe was hesitant for 5 or 10 minutes, like, oh man, okay. And then I was just like, all right, I guess if this is what people are doing, I'm fully vaccinated. I wasn't, you know, I trust that the vaccines are doing their job. So I was just kind of like, all right, I guess this is like, this is what we've been working towards to be out. And yeah, so far so good.
And has anything crazy happened? Is there anything that you've gotten on film that people will be
surprised by? Yeah, one thing. I'm Jewish and I wear a Star of David necklace outside of, like, I don't wear it in my shirt. I have been generally wearing it outside of my shirt just because, you know, with the recent Israeli-Palestine stuff, there was starting to be a lot of anti-Semitism that I was noticing. So I wanted to make, you know, I wanted it to be like out and proud, and I didn't want to feel weird about wearing it. So I wore it. And there was a guy in Denver. We've been doing a lot of man on the street interviews, especially at night where people are out at the bars, because we're trying to show that like bar scene is back and people are drunk, people are happy or whatever. But this guy was like arguing with another guy about like the Israeli-Palestine thing for some god awful reason at 1 a.m. in the streets of Denver. And he noticed my chain and he started getting mad at me about, I don't know, he wanted us to talk about it while we were filming. And then, you know, it was very confusing, but he kind of was very aggressive and we almost seemed like got in a fight. And he was walking away, he kept calling me a Jew fuck, which was surprising. I was like, you know, maybe when I'm going to the South, I was like, oh, maybe I'll put the chain back in the shirt. But I wasn't really expecting that in Denver. But honestly, besides that, people have been extremely friendly. They've been very interested in what we're doing. And I think people are just ready to generally talk to people. So that was one bad thing that happened, but it's not very documentary. Like, you know, every documentary has like this drama, and ours has been just like, wow, it's more been like a revelation. Like, wow, I guess the country's back. So it's a weird thing to try to like turn into a narrative, because the narrative seems to just be like, yep. People were ready and they did it and now they're back. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to edit and put together and see what we have.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Distant Voices. Thank you to everyone who was a part of this episode, including the guests and Willamette Week Newsroom. Also, special thank you to AmpMusic.co and Heather Witte for the music that you heard on this podcast. For more great content, be sure to follow Dive by Willamette Week on all podcast platforms, join us Saturdays for our Dive podcast show, and follow along with Willamette Week's content at WWeek.com and on all social platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.